next up we have Joel, or he is the Water Resources Policy Advocate at Natural Resources Defense Council, and he's going to talk to us about the need to implement the new federal flood risk management standard.
Well, thank you for the introduction. As you mentioned, my name is Joel Scala. I work as the Water Resources Advocate for the Natural Resources Defense Council. Most of my work revolves around flooding issues, especially the National Flood Insurance Program. We have some new policy proposals that we're putting forward to help kind of reduce the risk incentives for development in floodplains. And we'd be happy to talk to you guys about that later. But right now, I'm here to talk about the federal flood protection standards for a changing climate. So,
Joel, do you mind using that microphone?
Sure. So we're all too familiar with the devastating impacts of floods. From the 1993 flood along the Mississippi River to Hurricane Katrina to the recent floods in Texas and in Utah, we have clearly seen the threat flooding poses to people and property. However, flooding also presents serious economic consequences for the United States. It accounts for 85% of all our disaster declarations, and between 1980 and 2013, the United States suffered more than $260 billion in flood-related damages. And the rate of flooding is on the rise in many regions of the country. A recent University of Iowa study, The Changing Nature of Flooding in the Central United States, found that flooding is occurring more frequently in the Midwest. The study examined data from hundreds of stream monitoring stations throughout the Midwest and found that floods were becoming more frequent in a band stretching from North Dakota, south to Iowa, Missouri, and on through Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. And if you look at the picture here, you can see that there's a huge increase in the number of floods, especially along the Great Lakes region. In addition, we're seeing a massive uptrend in the number of billion-dollar disaster events that are occurring in the country. And so these are disaster events that have been ranked by NOAA as occurring or accruing more than $1 billion each event, if not more. And you can see that there's a huge uptick in the number of severe storms, tropical storms, and also flooding in recent years that have caused these massive disaster costs. So flooding leaves behind big costs for communities and taxpayers, and it's likely to increase as our climate changes. Climate change is raising sea levels and altering precipitation patterns. Coastal areas and many riverine communities will become increasingly susceptible to flooding. For coastal populations along the eastern seaboard, flood risk is projected to increase significantly within the next 100 years as sea levels rise between 2 and 6 feet. Riverine communities, also in many parts of the country, are entering a future in which flood events will not only become more frequent, but more severe. According to a report by FEMA, on a national average, riverine communities may experience an expansion of their 100-year floodplain from anywhere from 20 to 50%. So that's a massive expansion of the floodplain that's not only just result in bigger floods, but more damage to the surrounding properties. Unfortunately, carbon dioxide, the heat-trapping gas that has caused or that is driving global warming, lingers in the atmosphere for hundreds of years, and the planet, especially our oceans, take a while to respond to that warming. So even if they could hit like a button and stop emissions of greenhouse gases at today's current levels, the climate is still going to change and it's going to continue to affect future generations. So we need to adapt for this change and we need to prepare for it. And the goal of adaptation is to reduce our vulnerability to the harmful effects of climate change, like sea level rise and more extreme storm events, by increasing our resilience to these types of scenarios. The Federal Flood Risk Management Standard is one of the most far-reaching federal policies in recent years on climate change adaptation. The standard was developed by the President's Task Force on Climate Preparedness and Resilience, and it was signed into law by President Obama via Executive Order 13690. The standard will help reduce the risk and cost of future flood disasters by requiring all federal investments in or affecting a floodplain to meet higher flood risk standards. Further, it better attains the original intention of Executive Order 11988, the predecessor to Executive 13690, by requiring all federal agencies to use natural systems and green infrastructures or in green infrastructure when developing alternatives to constructing in a floodplain. So the original Executive Order 11988 was issued by President Carter in May 1977 and governs all federal actions in a floodplain. Not only did each agency have to take action to reduce their flood risk, but they also had to take action to restore and preserve the natural and beneficial values of the floodplains. And for the original executive order, if an agency was going to be building or fund construction in a floodplain, that construction had to be built to the height of a 100-year flood level. However, this standard is rapidly becoming obsolete. It was designed to basically address yesterday's flooding, which we should really be addressing the floods of tomorrow. And what do I mean by this statement? The 100-year flood level is based on a historical average of past floods, and it does not account for future conditions. So building only to the level of 100-year flood does not leave any room for adjustment in case the climate changes. And this is where the new standard is a major improvement over its predecessor. The standard anticipates increases in both climate change and intensity of those impacts over time. Under the standard, federal agencies must use more protective design standards when just making decisions about what to build, where to build, and which local and state projects receive federal funding. Agencies will have the flexibility to choose among the following. Use the best available climate science data to determine future flood levels and build above that level. Build structures to the height of, or build structures 2 feet above the 100-year flood level for normal infrastructure and 3 feet for critical infrastructure like hospitals and wastewater treatment plants, or just build to the 500-year flood level. So agencies that select the climate-based science approach must utilize the best available climate science data and best available hydrologic and hydraulic data that accounts for future changes in flooding to the climate to determine the flood elevation in the flood hazard area. This approach ensures that the expected future changes, including changes in climate and land use, are accounted for in calculations of the expected future floods. So for areas that are vulnerable to coastal flood hazards, the climate-informed science approach would include the regional sea level rise variability as well as the life cycle of the structure. So as the image depicts, if you're going to be building federal infrastructure that's expected to last beyond 2050, you're going to want to be building it so it is above the 2050 floodplain. So for the 2010 floodplain, yeah, if you build to there currently, it's fine, but by 2050, not only are you within the floodplain, but you're also subjected to storm surge. So the new climate science approach would encourage federal agencies to determine where the floodplain would be by the end of the life cycle of the new infrastructure. So while a significant amount of climate science has already been developed, there are still uncertainties as to how climate change will affect flood conditions, especially in riverine environments. The Freeboard Value approach provides a flexible and effective option for federal agencies to account for the uncertainties of climate change where their actions may negatively affect the riverine floodplain. So the importance of the Freeboard Value approach is that it expands the floodplain area beyond the footprint of the traditional special flood hazard area. The higher vertical elevation and expanded footprint ensure that the uncertainties associated with climate change and other future conditions are adequately accounted for in federal agency planning. So currently, almost all state and local governments apply the requirement for higher freeboard to the footprint of the special flood hazard area. This is cutting the elevation requirement off at the current special flood hazard area, creates basically artificial islands of protection because future conditions are not addressed. Future flooding will be influenced by factors such as altered precipitation patterns and land use decisions. So by solely adding higher elevation to the standard, higher elevation standard to the current understanding of the special flood hazard area, infrastructure located at the fringes, where you see the horizontal extension, will remain susceptible. And so thus expanding horizontally in addition to vertically ensures that future conditions, in particular the effects of climate change, are accounted for when federal agencies are carrying out actions that are occurring on floodplain. And you have the 500-year level protection. Basically, this is just building your infrastructure to the height of the 500-year flood or outside of it. The positives are is a very high level of protection for riverine environments. One of the negatives of choosing this standard is that it doesn't account for a wave action or storm surge. And so this choice would be best suited for coastal areas, whereas the other two would be. So, and additionally, the standard is a significant step forward for protecting our floodplains and preserving habitat. Per the standard, agencies are required, where possible, to use natural systems and green infrastructure when developing alternatives to constructing a floodplain. It is a wise use of the floodplain to achieve both flood loss reduction and the conservation and protection of natural and beneficial functions of our water resources. Natural systems and nature-based risk reduction strategies provide multiple benefits, inclusive of, but not limited to, mitigating flood levels and also just generating economic revenue. And this is, so when does this apply? The standard applies to all federal actions in or affecting a floodplain, including acquiring, managing, and disposing of federal lands and facilities, providing federally undertaken finance or assisted construction improvements, and conducting federal activities. Applying to firms to all federal actions ensures consistency over the departments. And this also is interesting to note that this is the same definition as the original Executive Order 11988. So this is not a big expansion over federal agencies, and it's not a big expansion of government power. It's the definition of federal action that's been in place since the 70s. And while it is expansive and encompassing, it's not without its limitations. So the standard will not affect National Flood Insurance Program rates or standards. So according to FEMA, the standard will not change the minimum floodplain criteria communities must adopt in order to participate in the National Flood Insurance Program for floodplain areas, nor will it affect floodplain mapping standards or the ratings and claims practices of the NFIP. Thus, the standard will have no effect on the cost of federal insurance for policyholders. FEMA also is not going to incorporate the expanded floodplain delineation or elevated flood heights into the flood insurance rate maps. So the standard is not going to force property owners and renters to obtain insurance if they're outside of the special flood hazard area. Additionally, the standard three methods for floodplain protection will not apply to activities requiring Department of Army authorization under Section 404 of the Clean Water Act or Section 10 of the Rivers and Harbors Act. Private developers will not have to adhere to the standard's elevation requirements merely because they obtained a Department of Army permit. However, the Executive Order 11988's 100-year floodplain elevation requirement will continue to apply to the Department of Army permit applications as it has done in the past. And this is not a novel idea. I mean, many communities throughout the country, 386 participating in the community rating system have freeboard requirements above 2 feet. Numerous states, Indiana, Montana, New York, and Wisconsin also have a 2-foot freeboard standard. And this is not just for federal investments. This is for all development, private and public, within a floodplain. Georgia has 3-foot freeboard requirement, and more than 60% of the U.S. population lives in communities that have higher freeboard requirements than the National Flood Insurance Program. So this new federal flood risk management standard is basically catching up the federal government with state and local organizations. And long term, the standard will reduce the cost of future flooding, as it's cheaper to build safer today than it is to rebuild tomorrow. The benefits of hazard mitigation are the avoided losses, ones that would have occurred if mitigation had never been implemented. Pre-disaster mitigation efforts are proven to reduce the associated costs of post-disaster recovery, and the benefit-cost ratio of FEMA flood hazard mitigation grants are illustrative of this concept. Most hazard mitigation grants have a 4-to-1 cost-benefit ratio, meaning for every dollar spent, you avoid $4 in potential cost damages. So what's the current status of the Federal Flood Risk Management Standard? Well, the implementation guidelines are currently under review by the Water Resources Council, and they're expected to be released early October. The implementation guidelines are used by the agencies to determine how to best incorporate the standard into their existing agency processes for floodplain management. And have gone through an extensive public input process through not only a public comment period, but there's also multiple listening sessions that occurred throughout the country. Unfortunately, roadblocks have been thrown up by Congress to prevent the fiscally sound measure from being implemented. Numerous riders have been attached to appropriation bills that would prohibit funding from being used by any agency now or in the future to implement the Federal Flood Risk Management Standard. This is basically, if approved and became law, would render it an empty vessel. And this is something that we need to ensure does not happen. Because as I mentioned before, this is one of the most far-reaching climate change adaptation policies that have come out in a while. It will not only just help communities adapt, but is a great way to reduce our costs associated with flooding, especially for the federal government. So what have we done? National Resources Defense Council, American Rivers, National Wildlife Federation, and David Conrad here and I have been going on lots of lobby visits to talk to congressional officials, asking them to support the standard. Pew Charitable Trust has also been helping us as long, and basically we've been just contacting our officials and asking them to support the standard. And if you have time tomorrow during your lobby visits, we ask that you do the same. David and I will be happy to join any of you guys who are willing to do this and be a support for you. And if you have any questions, please feel free to ask. Thank you.